Today's podcast, we have myself, Kate, and Lewis to have a little bit of a round table chat around my upcoming hip surgery or my hip replacement. We delve into how we got to this stage, how it is quite rare for someone my age, obviously, and some of the pros and cons of surgical interventions, using Lewis's incredible mind to give us a little bit of clarity on the pros and cons of surgery. Really informative one around, I guess, the journey itself, the rehab aspects of it, the prehab aspects of it. So yeah, tune in. Any questions, shoot us a message. We'd love to hear from you. Just a quick one, shout out to our sponsors, LSKD, for their ongoing support of the podcast and making all you guys look amazing.
And us.
And us, of course, yeah, and all the crew here. Use the code REBUILDCREW15 for 15% off all your gifts. Go check them out now. They got heaps of new gear just launched.
Awesome leggings, really supportive sports bras, everything apparel, even got scrunchies, water bottles, bags. Go check it out and enjoy the discount.
I'm James Beatty.
And I'm Sean Carroll.
And welcome to the Rebuild Health and Fitness Podcast.
How do you want to start it?
We'll just say
welcome.
Welcome back to the Rebuild Health and Fitness Podcast. It is a favourite time for year for myself and Kate, where we kick James off and we take control. It's what everyone wants. It's what the people want. It's what we'll give them. But today we thought we'd bring in some backup and bring in Lewis to add a little bit of intelligence to the podcast. But yeah, today we thought we would share, I guess, my journey around how I got to being able to have a hip replacement. Again, it's a, I guess from our perspective, it's a story that we want to document from, I guess, pre-surgery, after surgery, and then the whole recovery journey, because I think for me personally, I think it'd be a cool thing to document, to be able to look back and see the progress I've made and where I'm going. And I think even just, you know, I think other people might find value in the story somewhere. And I think just even down the track, you know, 20 years from now when I'm doing backflips and stuff, it'd be cool to see.
But particularly because you're so young.
Thank you.
That's for a hip replacement. You're going to feel real young in the ortho wing when you're getting it done.
Yeah.
I know I did when I was getting my surgery. I was like, oh my God, this whole wing is just like 80-year-olds getting hip replacements. So I think it's particularly interesting because you're young and because of other factors, which we'll talk about. But like, I think that's something when people have health issues, they can feel very alone.
Mm.
And so like, I know I was talking to you about my godbrother. He's got oval-shaped hips, I think, and he's got osteoarthritis. So he can't run anymore because of his hips. And so I was like, Sean would be a good one to connect you with because he's like 25. So that's quite debilitating. And he doesn't know anyone his age who's got hip issues, and he's had to radically change his life to accommodate that. So I think that's very powerful to share those kind of stories.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, bringing Lewis on today is going to be valuable from a few perspectives. Like I said, he's going to add a little bit of intelligence to be able to discuss what we're going through. But Lewis has also been with me, I guess, since the onset of my initial hip problems back in 2014 is when it all sort of, I guess, looking back, is when it all began to kick off. And again, no fault of his own that we've ended here, but I like to remind him it is.
It's very generous of you not to blame me for yeah, this outcome. So I appreciate that that's, you know, we've got that on the record now.
But yeah, I guess looking back on the journey so far, now, there wasn't any one specific mechanism, I believe, that led me to this decision. I do think, you know, genetics play a part and just, again, just a bit of bad luck overall. But I remember the first time I had specific sharp hip pain that sort of stopped me in my tracks was back in 2014, and I was just doing a few overhead squats. And I pulled up really lame on one rep. It was like a thunderbolt, like just as soon as it happened, my body was just like almost like lost all power, like shut down. And then you were still early days You might have still been in uni then.
I was still a student at that time. Yeah. I graduated at the end of 2015, so I was about. I remember you approaching me about it to have a chat.
Yeah, and I remember at the time we thought it was just like a strained hip flexor or something like that. Misdiagnosed, could have solved the problem, but yeah, not throwing blame.
Straight under the bus after, you know, pulling me out, he's straight back underneath.
Yeah, and then from there, you know, rehab well, didn't have any issues with it until 2015. I was playing rugby and I remember I was just ran out from the back for the scrum and looked square up on someone and I've stepped off my right leg and then I've felt my right abductor just explode, for lack of a better term. And that was like, you know, I think it was a high grade 2 tear in my abductor. And I went to the physio and they started doing like these, as you would in a screening, they were testing the internal external rotation of my hip and there was none. So that was a red flag straight away. And then through some further testing, they sort of, I guess, diagnosed me with hip impingements. I don't know if you remember.
Yep.
So remember what the crack was there?
Yeah, you had a what they call a cam morphology, I believe, and a small pincer around the rim of your – so your hip is a ball and socket, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then at the top of your thigh bone, there's like a little neck that connects the thigh bone to the ball. So a cam morphology refers to that neck is thicker than the average person. Now, I think the context is important there because any young male who's played a lot of sport, done a lot of impact loading, a lot of heavy weightlifting will have some thickening of the femoral neck. So like cam morphology is actually very common in people who are pain-free. But what it will do is probably limit your ability to internally rotate at the hip. So you're probably never going to be a supple leopard who can get down into that like W stretch and drop your knee to the ground, right?
Yeah. But I used to stretch a lot, which was like it was kind of like something I was really, really diligent at. Like I was always trying to open up my hips and do all that kind of stuff. But yeah.
Well, again, and that's a good point, right? We can only overcome our bony anatomy so much, okay? Like you can't stretch a bone. You can't change the length of a bone.
Fucking tried.
But yeah, you had a red hot crack. And I do deal with some cases in clinic where I do think that particularly in the CrossFit space and the gym space, hip mobility exercises get quite, I guess, almost they get promoted as a solution to a lot of things. So people will get a bit of a tight hip and they'll try and mobilize and stretch the hip out. And I can think of at least one or two cases where people probably have a cam morphology or something along those lines and all they're doing is irritating the soft tissues around that bony neck. And my advice is simply stop doing that. Give it a few weeks. We're going to work out of provocative ranges and the pain goes away.
Yeah.
So it could be it's sore at first and then they actually make it sorer by trying to mobilize it and then you give it a break and it settles right down. So but yes, that's what you were working with was that thickening of the femoral neck and a small pincer off the socket.
Yeah, and then from that point, I guess as the season progressed, and this was my first season back after a year and a half out with knee and shoulder issues, and then it sort of I forget how we got to this point, but I ended up getting referred to the Brisbane Hip Clinic and came to the conclusion after getting some scans and some further testing that having some kind of preventive surgery to help sort of tidy up that sort of hip impingement became a best option. They ended up doing both hips at the same time and out of all the surgeries I've had, it was the most painful one in terms of like the bounce back and the recovery, and it took a good year from that point for me to feel like I'd got benefit from the surgery. But you want to speak on that a little bit more? Because I remember sending you like the after action report and like they pretty much said like 70% of the surface of my femur was good or hip socket was good, but 30% was had a great like grade 4 on 4 bone on bone or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, I do recall obviously reading over that with you at the time and you were definitely on the slower end of recovery from that particular surgery, and it probably speaks to how these procedures are very rarely a slam dunk.
Yeah.
I think that's probably something that I would be critical of some specialists. I think Pat, the other guy you dealt with, Pat Weinrauch, is pretty quite good. But generally, I think some people are given unrealistic expectations around how soon they'll start feeling good, how soon they'll be back on their feet. And there is a really wide range of outcomes. So, but yeah, certainly while they were in there, they did find that you did have some early onset arthritic change within the ball and socket joint. I suppose bone on bone is probably not the type of word that I love using when it comes to arthritis, because I think it paints a very grim picture. A joint can never be completely bone on bone because of the fact that we have our synovial fluid, which fills the joint, and that can sort of cover cartilage defects and serve as a shock absorber and a lubricant. But certainly there can be areas where you have like loss of cartilage that goes down and uncovers part of the bone. So that's where the phrase comes from.
Yep.
But I suppose when you hear
that's sort of what causes that sort of jolting pain, right? When it like perhaps creates a bit more pressure in that area.
It's hard to say though, right? Like
I'm telling you.
Yeah. I think it makes sense when you hear that, and then when you have that sensation, I think it marries up quite nicely. It's not always that simple though. I suspect that, again, Kate mentioned before, was it your cousin you said that?
Oh, my godbrother.
Your godbrother, apologies.
I thought cousin too.
Yeah, same thing. So Kate's godbrother obviously has like a congenital difference in the shape of his ball, right? And we know that some people can have like dysplastic hips where it's like a shallower socket, the ball doesn't sit in as well and has like extra play, and those people tend to be predisposed to problems. So I think it probably does depend again on your underlying anatomy as to how much that those areas of cartilage loss may affect you, but it's incredibly complex. And do you know, even now, I think looking at your latest MRI, I've seen people who have seemingly worse scan reports who have much better function.
Yeah.
Right? So it sounds like their cartilage is in much dire straits, and yet they move better and they have less pain.
Yeah.
So that probably speaks to how it's rarely as simple as you look at a scan, you look at what's under the surface on an arthroscopy, and you go, yep, that's why this is.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Like my left hip on a scan is apparently substantially worse than my right. But, and even that was even in 2015 as well, like your left hip's your worst one. I was like, my left one doesn't hurt me.
Yep.
My right one's the one that's killing me.
Yeah. And again, that speaks to the complexity of the issue and how much we have yet to know and understand about why some people have debilitating pain with relatively good looking scans, a little bit of cartilage loss, and then why others can have lots of cartilage loss, be trying the same things and yet feel way better and potentially avoid surgery altogether.
But yeah, I guess now from that point, it took me about a year to recover. So we get to 2016, I get back to being able to do pretty much everything, playing footy, squatting, training as normal, no issues. Still a little bit tight through my hips, but we just sort of accepted that's just me. Then come October 2021, I remember I was in the gym. I was doing some snatches, so really looking to, I guess, hit that triple extension point, creating a fair amount of hit drive. And I had this pain I had never felt before. It was like, again, a lightning bolt sensation, but I'd get this crazy nervy referral that would just like run down my whole right leg, and it would last a few minutes. And I was like, oh, that's fucking weird. And spoke to you about it in passing. So we just backed off snatching a little bit. And then I was like, okay, I'll try again in a few weeks. Did it with the barbell. And I was like, oh, fuck, same thing happened again. Not as intense, but with an empty, essentially 20 kilos, like shouldn't really be expecting that. So I was like, okay, well, fuck that off. And then I went to play around with some hip thrusts. Again, same sort of thing. Anything that caused me to, I guess, use my glutes and get them to full range gave me this lightning bolt feeling. So we started treating it relatively conservatively. We just assumed I'd piss something up or I was doing something weird. And, you know, at that point I'd stopped playing footy, saying I had prevailed. So in that, I guess, that rehab process, we took out the things that were irritating. We're still able to do a lot. I was still doing most things. I could still run at that point. I was lunging instead of squatting. I was doing things that, you know, I could, yeah, like I said, I was doing things that weren't hurting me. But then 6 months or so passed. And we're like, okay, let's go have a chat to Pat, my hip surgeon. So we got a referral from him, from my doctor. That was in January. And then by the time I called Pat and made an appointment, it took me another 6 months to June 2022 to be able to see him. And by that stage, things were starting to get a little bit worse. So we had an MRI, and I remember we looked over that. I was like, it's not that bad. Like, there was some inflammation there, which was not to be unexpected, but all in all, it looked all right.
Yep. So the cartilage changes had advanced a little bit from your prior scan, but not it's a good example. It was not marrying up well with the symptoms you were reporting.
Yeah.
Like, you were having daily pain.
Couldn't walk.
Any hip extension would hurt. Any end range flexion would hurt. You was struggling to walk. Couldn't run. Really battling. So and yet you look at the MRI and it was like, it really doesn't seem too bad. Yes, there's obviously some joint changes there that might be contributing to this. However, it's far from catastrophic just on a scan. So we need to get the orthopedic surgeon's opinion.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And I was lucky enough for Lewis to come along and join me. We saw Pat, I think purely just out of you just wanted to come and interest and get your head around with some of the big dogs. And I know you weren't a massive fan of his approach, but I kind of was, because he's a straight shooter, straight to the point. Mm. And he's like, okay, you know, here's a scan. Doesn't look great. Here's our option. And I was like, and it was almost like a relief, like, fuck, there is something wrong with me that they can.
Yeah,
there's a solution to. It's not going to be like, oh yeah, we just need to go about this path for another 12 months, which we kind of had because I had to change my private health. But
yep.
he gave me a solution and was like, you know, we can, here's some pain management strategies that can get us through while your private health sort of cover kicks in. And yeah, we spent the last, nearly 12 months, where 10 months. Nearly there. We're 10 months into that 12-month wait period, and from that point we've just had to change our training again as things have sort of – I guess it was funny. Like, things have gotten progressively worse stage by stage. Like, I have a lot of back pain and stiffness now. I can't walk comfortably. I can't stand for long periods of time. Can't sit for long periods of time. I sleep with a – what are they called? Pregnancy pillow, because that's fucking – dope. Game changer to sleeping, because I couldn't just couldn't lay on my side and have my legs together like that. The sort of squeezing together was causing pain. And I think just off the back of that, like the stress that I think my body's under from being in pain, by the end of the day, like, I'm fucking exhausted, just tired. And like, you know, when you got a toddler who wants to run around and fucking chase you, I'm not a quitter. I'm going to try and chase him because to assert dominance. but after that, I'm done and I'm cooked. And it really, like, if I have a stressful day, I think the combination of all that really, really takes its toll. But I guess, you know.
It can probably add a little bit of context around all of that, I guess, from a video perspective. And also, for the record, I had no problem with Pat's approach. Pat's probably going to listen to this at some point. I don't want to think I was
Lewis hates
shitting on his opinion. No, I thought it was good. I think, as Kate said earlier, this situation is really rare, where we would have somebody of Sean's age having to go through with a surgery like this. I think
we'll talk about what that surgery is in a sec.
Absolutely. I think when it comes to osteoarthritis, there's a lot of misconceptions out there, and I don't want this discussion to, I guess, pour fuel on that fire, right? Mm. I think we should clear a few things up. So I think a lot of people view arthritis and arthritic changes like this progressive thing that gets worse with time, that's entirely related to wear and tear. And I think the common narrative I hear people sort of repeat back to me when they see me for it in clinic is, they're like, I know I stuffed my hip. I know I stuffed my knee when I played sport when I was younger.
Yeah.
And then, like, my follow-up is, well, okay, well, did you ever have a traumatic injury to your knee or your hip? And again, often the answer is no. Like, sometimes it is, but often the answer is no. And it's, well, okay, well, what have you done since stopping sport? And often it's very little. Okay. It's very little. And sometimes there are other general health comorbidities involved. And it's like, well, hang on, how exactly did you wear out your joint?
Yeah.
Like, we actually know now that there's not a really clearly defined relationship between physical loading of cartilage and development of arthritis. one of the more interesting studies I can think of that comes to mind was they followed a group of people in their 50s who run, who have knee arthritis. So they scanned their knees at baseline and they scanned them again 5 years later. And they continued to run and continued to have stable symptoms. So again, stiffness, some pain and swelling. And yet they didn't have any advancement of their arthritis. So they just kept on cracking, right? So it's not as simple as like, oh, you load your knee repetitively and the cartilage just gets worse and worse, right? And there's multiple studies that sort of back this idea up.
The body's very adaptable.
Very adaptable. And joints are adaptable, right? Arthritic joints are adaptable. And I believe I may have brought this up in a prior episode, but I have patellofemoral arthritis in my left knee as well.
Here we go.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, I've been able to build up certain things that used to provoke it to now be tolerable, right? So it's certainly not, it's not as simple as like, oh, once you have this, it's a death sentence. The joint eventually needs replacing and you should give up impact loading, okay? And I think where we've gone wrong is we've let that mentality sort of fester and spread, and it's what everyone believes. And so now I think too many people are just very quickly pushed towards knee replacements and surgeries and things of that nature, hip replacements, when in fact they could be managing better with some lifestyle interventions. So we sort of know it's not just about physical loading, although a past history of trauma will predispose you to it. So if you've torn your ACL, you're likely to develop some arthritis in the knee within 10 years of that event. Same for like major hip fractures involving the articular surface and things like that. But also we know that poor metabolic health, so being a diabetic, sort of having like, you know, high blood pressure and all of those sort of comorbidities can kind of be something that would feed into like poor cartilage health generally, because we actually see people who have higher BMIs and higher, I guess, adipose tissue around their organs, so body fat around their organs. They can tend to be a little bit more prone to things like hand and wrist arthritis. So, I mean, if it was simple wear and tear, they're not walking around on their hands, right? Like, so that's something that we need to be mindful of, right? So I think traditionally people with arthritis have been pushed towards these joint replacements a bit too quickly without considering, can we maybe manage it another way? But I think now we've also got to a stage where sometimes things have flipped too far the other way, where we have people who are suffering a lot with their arthritis. They might be in their late 40s, early 50s, and they're told, no, you're too young, you should put off a joint replacement. Now, I think where a joint replacement is really good is when people have tried everything else and done it really well and been like very consistently trying to do the right things. Their general health is good, they're exercising, they're doing everything, and yet they're still suffering. And so Sean falls into this camp, right? And we've tried every potential approach to get his joint pain under control. And yeah, no, to no avail. No avail. And that's where it's almost like silly not to consider, well, could we potentially get some relief from something a bit more invasive, right? Because when you're suffering to that degree and when it's spilling into other avenues of your life, caring for your child, your children, all those sorts of things, it's like something has to give. And I think that if we continually put it off, we could be prolonging suffering.
Yeah.
Now, I suppose the other thing to mention in that conversation is the traditional concern with having a joint replacement too early in life is that you'll have to have it done again later on. And that used to be the case, I think, but nowadays the data suggests that knee and hip replacements actually last a really long time.
Yeah.
So I've actually looked at some data for this, and I think that it seems to be somewhere between, for hips in a study done in 2019, somewhere between like 58 and 75-77% last at least 25 years, right? So they last a really long time after the fact, right? And it's a similar kind of story for knees, right? It's I think it's a little bit higher than that, but they don't wear out as quickly as we would have thought. And we got to remember too, that was 2019, so that's looking at data from replacements that were done
years ago. Yeah.
So as time goes on, those materials get better and better. And that was an interesting conversation we had with Pat during your appointment. Was he sort of said, with the hip resurfacing operation that he's pitching to you, they use a special like metal alloy for those, and sometimes a ceramic material, but particularly that metal alloy, they're wearing really well. Like, you know, 20 years on, he's seen people who've had this done and scan them and there's no appreciable sign of wear on the prosthesis. And these are people who are very active. Like they're doing things like running. They're
doing everything. Yeah, they do it for ice hockey players, professional ice hockey players to get back. Frankie Edgar, UFC fighter.
Yep. Absolutely. Andy Murray is the other one that comes to mind. So I believe earlier this year he won a match in the Australian Open and he put out a tweet. I actually got a screenshot of it here because I figured it was a good one to bring up. But he spoke about how so this was on the 21st of January, so 22nd of January this year. He said, 2 days ago, I randomly bumped into the doctor who in 2017 told me, the good news is the problem you have in your hip can be fixed, but you won't be able to play professional sport again. I think we dispelled that myth the last 5 days. Good night.
Yeah.
And everyone was making a really big deal out of that. That went viral. And I think it's awesome. Like he did come back from what seemed like it could be a career-ending injury. And this particular surgery is a big reason why.
Yeah. So I guess the main differences between a hip resurfacing procedure and I guess the traditional hip replacement is I guess the hip resurfacing procedure is more so considered the younger man's hip replacement, and it's more of a bone preserving procedure. So with the, I guess, the old school, you know, hip replacement, it's still very much in common practice and still serves its purpose. But a good way to think about it is, I guess, they remove the head of the femur and then they drill down and create like they hollow out the femur essentially, and then they drop like a stem in there. Now, problem with that being, especially for old populations, it is very invasive. It is very painful, but there is a chance of the bone, the hip or the femur fracturing during the procedure. But it also is, there is no bone left to preserve for future operations, whereas that the hip resurfacing procedure takes a similar approach in the sense that still, I guess, remodeling the head of the femur, but it preserves far more bone. So in the sense that, say, 30, 40 years down the track, if my new hip wears out, there's still enough bone there preserved to do the old school procedure.
Yep, and that's exactly what they do. In the event that a hip resurfacing fails, they do convert it to a total hip. And again, there's, as you said, there's a lot of advantages to that, one being the conversion factor. I think too.
Less dislocations.
Yeah, less dislocations. It seems to be nice. Dislocations. Absolutely. And again, I think for people who are younger, who want to do higher impact activities and things like that, some of the sort of, I guess, expert opinion at least anyway, sort of says that these are a better option. They'll sort of enable you to do a bit more. So, as you said, I think the name kind of gives it away, right? Instead of chopping off the neck of the femur and the whole ball and then sticking this stem deep down into the femur.
And it's like, maybe we can put some photos with it because there's some here that are like, it goes deep.
If you look at a scan of a total hip replacement, you see how deep that stem goes down into the femur.
Yeah.
And in the process of doing that, sometimes they don't always get the measurements perfect.
Mm.
And I have had a few cases of people who go, oh, yeah, my surgeon says my leg's now 2 centimeters shorter than it was before. Or,
My dad's is like that.
Yeah,
he got his hip replaced and now he's got a 2 centimeter variation in his leg.
And you know, like leg length discrepancies, like 90% of us have them, right? It's normal to have a leg length discrepancy. But I'd argue that if you've gone 30 years adapted to one leg length, and then suddenly it's different.
It's going to cause you a bit of grief.
Yeah, I think that can potentially cause problems. I still think people adapt to it. Like I've dealt with a few people who have had this new leg length discrepancy that have no dramas, but then I've had some others that have found it hard to deal with. So the benefit of a hip resurfacing is that's not going to happen because they're harvesting less bone and there's less like potential for measurement error there as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, overall it's still – both are still incredibly – invasive. And I guess I remember when I got my pre-surgery pack, I remember I spoke to you about it. It was like, there's a 1 in 100 chance of death, or no, 1,000. But either way, it wasn't fucking good odds.
But there's risk of death in any surgery because you could die of infection.
But they said that's the main thing, but there's also, it's not really rare that a 31 year old gets a gets a hip replacement, and they sort of can say, like, you know, during the I was speaking to the surgeon, man. He's like, we kind of know if someone is severely at risk of passing away during the procedure based on, you know, their age, lifestyle factors, and how they're currently presenting.
Yeah, it's a big thing, hey. So, I mean, if we actually had a big enough sample size of 30-year-olds getting hip replacement, I'd say the rate of them dying would be much lower.
Yeah.
It'd be much, much lower.
More likely to die in the car on the way to the hospital.
Yeah, that's probably right. That's, yeah. Yeah.
Drive safe, people.
Comforting thought, Sean. Comforting thought. No, it's, yeah, your risk is pretty low, I'd suggest, on that front, just to be reassuring.
But unfortunately, they're going to cut through my butt.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we can. Oh, your juicy booty.
My juicy booty, which will be a shame.
Scars are hot, though. Girls love scars.
Yeah, chick stick scars. But yeah, I don't know if you can see that.
Oh, don't. No, yeah, I don't want to see photos, please. Okay.
Got some surgical photos up here for Kate, but
that's me.
It is. It's a weird one. Like, they say that, you know, once you're awake, the weirdest feeling is not like my arthritic pain. The pain I have, like, literally now sitting here, will be gone. It's just replaced by a whole bunch of other pain, but you're kind of happy to deal with it. In the sense that, you know, like, every day or every week, it's going to get better. So I think the surgery itself lasts maybe 3-4 hours. I'll spend the next 3 days in hospital. But the interesting thing they get you to do, and I guess, you know, it's easier to do while you're still pretty drugged up, is like 3 hours post-surgery, they get you weight bearing, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it is cool. And it probably, again, speaks to, like, I mean, just how solid that all is right away, right? Like, it's obviously not as solid as it will be down the line, but, you know, weight bearing is perfectly safe. And we know the sooner we get you up and get you moving, the better your outcome will be. So that'll be an experience. That'll be a time.
Yeah.
I was well jealous of the hip replacement patients. It was like I had to stay flat on my back for 3 days. So spinal fluid didn't leak because it cut into my spine. And then I was in a ward with three, like, 80 plus year olds getting their hips done, and they walking around, and I wasn't even allowed to sit up to drink my coffee. I was like, this is fucked. I was like, if technology can let you bastards be up on your feet in 3 hours, why can't I sit up?
They say on the ward they've got, like, it's pretty much like the next day, it's like a racetrack around, like, the ward.
Yeah.
Because they get all those cripples getting up and racing around. They've got, like, a wooden car that you have to practice, like, getting into and
they
stuff
should have,
like that.
Like, racer tracks. I think around they do. The circle in the hospital. That'd be awesome. Yeah. Maybe in the private system.
I'm
going
to fucking smash it.
Sean, if you don't smash it, that'll be so embarrassing.
I'm going to break the record.
So is it both your hips or just one?
So, yeah, and that's the kicker. So in my final consult, again, Pat being a straight shooter, he's like, we will have to do your other one. No ifs, ands, or buts, but at the moment, being it not symptomatic but actually looking worse on a scan, he's like, look, there's no point us operating while there's still tread left on the tire. And I'm like, I almost want to get it done because I don't want to go through this twice, because I'm essentially not wasting my youth, but, like, it is going to be a full year recovery. And I'd rather double down, get them both done now, and then just cop it. But, yeah, my left one, it does annoy me. It is tighter and it does catch from time to time. But it could, like, it might not bother me for another fucking 10 years.
And that's the key thing, right? It's if he was so certain about it needing to get done, but yet he then says there's no point doing it while there's still tread left on the tire, but then again, it looks worse on a scan. Can you see all the...
Yeah.
Like, it's this stuff is not certain. Like,
yeah.
it really isn't, and he's gazing into his crystal ball there a bit. But
he just looks at me and sees money.
Yeah. That's the uncharitable Cha-ching. Way to spin it. But no, I think it does speak to the uncertainties of these things, right? And again, I certainly wouldn't say that it's a guarantee. I wouldn't say it's a guarantee, and it will be very interesting as you start to get into some of those higher level functional activities like running and, you know, getting into some squatting and lifting again, how your other hip sort of tolerates that.
Yeah.
But I guess the key will be just having a graded enough approach where we minimize the risk of that flaring up. And then, yeah, we can cross that bridge when we come to it. The beauty is you're covered now.
Yeah.
So you don't have that burden of having to wait another year in the event that it did have to get done. But I certainly wouldn't say that that's a certainty.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Which is good. But you also said, like, I was fine. So And here we are.
Can I just say it's the cutest that you guys talk in we, not like Sean's not like I. He's like, we went to see Pat and we got scans and we sat in the MRI and it's like, oh, Lou, that's for everything. It's like so sweet.
Well, it's cool. Lewis can like look at all my scans before. Like I don't have to see the doctor. I just like, Lou, give it to me straight.
Yeah, that's what I enjoyed that about when I tore my MCL.
Yep.
It's like, tell me the truth.
You can cut out the middleman a little bit.
Yeah.
But I guess from a recovery standpoint, I think it's I'm 3 weeks double crutches and then 2 weeks single crutch, but I might just get a cane or a pimp stick. I think that would be far better.
They look really painful though to lean on, to actually weight bear with.
Yeah, but it looks cool.
I reckon we petition the members about buying Sean a pimp stick.
Yeah,
I'd fucking as a recovery.
With his head on. It.
No, I want a diamond head of James. At the bottom.
Can we just circle back because you said it's a year recovery?
Yeah.
Is it actually a year recovery? Is that what you anticipate until you're back to where you were?
Well, they've said a year recovery from day of surgery. I think one of the main reasons for that is they want the bone to sort of solidify around the joint. So it's 6 months post-surgery, like no impact.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so no running, no jumping, no skipping. Anything like that.
But you can't do that anyway.
Yeah, well, I can't do that now. But they really, like, I guess the bone's compromised because of the what they're doing to it. So they want it to, you know, I think when someone breaks their arm, it's like 6 to 8 weeks for the bone to heal, if not longer.
Yeah, to be solid enough for you to put a significant amount of stress through it without it potentially breaking further or refracturing or whatever it may be. That bony consolidation process does go on for some time after the procedure, even though, yes, it's solid, yes, you can put weight through it and get around and do things like squats and whatnot. Like, we got to remember that when you jump and you run, there's orders of magnitude higher force going through the body. Like, you look at some of the data, depending on how high and intensely you jump, if you just jump and land on the spot, it could be between 3 and 9 times your body weight coming down through the leg, right? So
I jump high.
Yeah, Sean's an athlete. But I guess, again, to circle back to that recommendation about 6 months, I have heard of cases of people getting back to running 3 months after a hip resurfacing.
Yeah. So, and I think they always try and – I think, you know, we're going to document the whole journey anyway, but I think for them to – they always, I guess, suggest a worst-case scenario, as in, like –
least fit and healthy person.
But if they're like, it's like, oh, you'll be back to normal in a month and I'm not, then I'm going to be fucking pissed off.
Yep. So they're covering their ass, and orthopedic specialists do this all the time. Mm. They'll say to people, oh yeah, they do and they don't, right? Like, there are times where they're probably overpromise, and then there are other times where they say this. They say, yep, 6 months, no impact. When, you know, if you were doing quite a bit of impact loading prior to the surgery, if you've got really good bone stock and you're not at high risk of a what they call a periprosthetic fracture, where the bone meets the prosthesis for the hip resurfacing, it's a little bit more vulnerable to breaking.
Yep.
So if you have poor bone stock, the pressure of that on the bone can cause a fracture. So, but if you're not ticking those boxes and you're used to running beforehand, you can potentially get back a little bit faster. It's just safer in inverted commas to wait more time.
Yeah.
But that's the same for a lot of things. Like, I'll use ACL reconstructions as an example, right? Like, the conventional return to sport timeline is 9 months, right? But we actually now know that the graft doesn't really reach like peak maturity until maybe 18 to 24 months post surgery.
Yeah.
So going back at 9 months, like, okay, if you're meeting all the functional testing criteria and psychological readiness and all that sort of stuff, yeah, like, okay, your risk is probably still lower. But from a purely graft strength perspective, you're probably better off waiting longer just to be on the safe side. Mm. Like, I tend to, yeah.
See that quite often in footy. They have that sort of, they say it's a season and injury. Mm. They do it in March and then they look to be back for next year. They get through preseason, then they get into the game, which is a bit more unpredictable.
Yep.
And so often you see re-ruptures.
Yeah, or secondary, like, compensatory soft tissue injuries, like hamstring tears. I'm a massive nerd and I play a lot of fantasy sports. I have a personal policy. I don't take anyone anymore who's in their first season back from an ACL. A lot of people do because they often in your draft, you get them at a bit of a discount because it's like, oh, they were hurt last year. Let's take them. But I'm like, nah, not doing it, because the best case scenario is they make it through but very rarely do they perform at their pre-injury level that first season back. It's usually the year after that they're good, like really, really good again.
Yeah.
But your worst case scenario is they tear their other ACL or they do a hammy or they have some sort of secondary issue that, that goes on. So,
man, like, again, just from personal experience, like when I did my knee, like that first, I reckon, yeah, at least two seasons back, the way I would like go into tackles, I'd like load up, like I had my left knee done. I'd like, when I was getting tackled, I'd load up on my right leg to almost like get the weight off my left foot. So I'd just sort of like fly up.
Yep.
Or like when I had my shoulder reco, I'd put my body in horrendous decisions. So I didn't have to hit with my left, I'd hit with my right.
Mm-hmm.
And it took like, yeah, that took years to build that sort of confidence back in the body. And again, some people have it quicker, but and, I did not.
Yeah. And I think that's probably where like conventional rehab approaches have maybe let people down a little bit, where I don't know that we take people far enough. I don't know that we prepare them quite enough historically. Like, it's getting a lot better and there are lots of really good clinicians out there that now push the boundaries of that a little bit and try and make sure people are like super robust before they go back. But I think in the past it's been a bit too much like, oh, you met the minimum tissue healing time frame of 9 months, your quad strength's all right. Okay, see you later. Like, or if they're even testing quad strength at all, right? And that's letting people down. So I think we should be shooting for higher.
Yeah.
Don't you think there's a gap too in like the hospital physio and the like you physio in sport performance? Because in the hospital, when I got my spinal surgery, they're like 6 weeks, do nothing. No, like don't lift more than 5 kilos. Don't walk too far. Don't do anything.
Yeah.
And then it was like, okay, you're cleared to walk. I wasn't cleared to like get back in the gym or run or anything. So then it was off my own back, had to reach out to rebuild to go, I need PT because I can't even move.
Yeah.
My whole body like had so much muscle wastage. I was so weak from a year of being sick.
Yep.
But there was no like progression to that. It was just you're in good enough shape to live. Off you go, and the rest was on me.
Yeah, and I think, so to circle back to the first part of your question, is there a distinction between the hospital versus private? I think that there can be, but I'd say it's very much based on the individual practitioner that you get in both settings. Okay, so because I know that there are plenty of private practitioners who – and I've heard other – but they'll advertise themselves as like, okay, we do sports injuries. But they've got no idea how to do sports injuries. It's purely marketing. It's just, oh yeah, we deal with sports injuries. Come on in. And it's like, well, no, you don't get the sport. You don't have the ability to assess the things that you need to assess to build the physical qualities to go back to the sport. So no, you can get dodgy ones in private practice as well, obviously. But I think in the public system where they're probably a little bit hamstrung is they're kind of, I think for the most part, looking at what do you need to do to get back to that minimum level of function just to get on with your day. And they're all about patient flow in a sense. They don't want to be over-servicing. They've got like a massive wait list all the time. So, and then the other thing is you get physios on a rotational basis through the hospital where some of them are really interested in MUSC and really engage with it. But I do know of, and you know, being a physio and talking with physios, I know some people like dread their MUSC rotation just because they don't enjoy it.
Yeah.
So of course, if you just cop someone like that who's just, you know, counting down the days to get out of their MUSC rotation, I don't know that you're necessarily going to get the most investment in your goals and your care, so to speak. So it's a long way of saying I think it's still very individual. Like you can still get some really good clinicians in the hospital, and I know of a few who are like fantastic, and there are still some really dodgy private ones too. So but where the hospital gets let down, I think, is because they don't have the resources and the space to cater to a specific goal like yours. You're like, I want to get back to CrossFit. I want to get back to CrossFit training. So like, what chance do they have of being able to build you up in that outpatient environment? Like, I don't know if you remember what their clinic was like.
It was so shit. Yeah, like, they'd just be like, oh, can you walk to that line and back? I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, give me some actual challenges. Let me load some weight. But it also is interesting because it is very, like you're saying, it's clinician specific. It's like patient centric too. Because remember, we were talking to Lily Riley, who had a kidney removed because she had a 12 centimeter tumor. And she was like, the doctor said, oh, you can't lift more than 5 kilos. And she's like, 5 kilos to someone else is not 5 kilos to me. It's like the equivalent, you know, she just did a 272 kilo back squat.
Yep.
5 kilos is probably the equivalent of 1 kilo to a regular person.
It's a, it's a bit of a piss take, isn't it? And I think like, you remember Erin with her foot, like, and Erin was prior to fracturing her foot had like quite a high level of function and quite high level goals. And I think for a while there with the first people who were handling her rehab, they just weren't pushing her hard enough. And like, she knew that too. She was like, oh, this just doesn't, this isn't anything to me. Like I'm not, and I'm going backwards in other areas because you're not giving me enough to keep me engaging and keep me stimulated. Yeah. So I guess where like a really good person in that sort of outpatient clinic, like they may not have the equipment to help you meet your goals, but they probably should know of people in the area that can, and then they can refer you on. And I think that that would be great care. It's like, hey, let's make sure that Kate is good enough just to crack on with life, and then she has high level goals. Cool, we're going to refer her to Lou. Like he's going to sort that out for us, because they don't have the resources.
Yeah, giving them next steps.
Yep, yep, totally.
So I guess, you know, post surgery for me, we got that, I guess, 6 weeks of not doing much. I think I can come in and use a bike.
Yep.
Just get moving, which I think will be a big one, just being able to come in and do something. But what can we expect on this rehab journey? Obviously, my ass will be destroyed, so I've got to build that back up.
Oh, yeah. R.I.P. Sean's ass.
Yeah. Me time.
Get some nice before. Spot. Yeah, we'll get some befores.
But didn't you say that half of your bum's already started to
Yeah, there's a distinct difference between my like right bum cheek and my left bum cheek.
Yep. Yep. So we're launching.
Old lefty's like, he's working hard.
We're launching an OnlyFans attached to this this podcast now.
I tried that the other week, but I had no bites. I was going to sell feet pics, but no one got in.
Maybe
no
try it. Like lopsided booty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's niche.
It's a niche market. I don't think we're serving the people who are into that. So we should be looking into that. But no, I guess in terms of recovery, again, I think you'll be able to get in and get on the bike like pretty quickly and potentially
with a pillow on the seat, I think.
Yeah. Pillow on the seat. Potentially even the ski erg you may get away with as well.
Yeah.
Although we may need to modify your range of motion in terms of how far you hinge over, depending on how sensitive that is. You'll also be able to, I think, get into fairly quickly some like open chain strength stuff, like the leg extension machine, like the hamstring curl, like some hamstring bridges and things, which is closed chain, but isn't putting
what's open and closed chain?
So open chain just means that the end of your limb isn't fixed to the ground. So you think like a squat where your foot's on the ground, right? Versus a leg extension where your foot is free.
Oh, okay.
So the big difference between
the two. No, like compressive loading.
Yeah, compressive and axial load, right? And you think about the difference between a leg extension versus a squat. A squat is going to load the hip in some way, and you're going to have some fairly limited ROM for probably like 8 to 12 weeks afterwards above 90 degrees of flexion. It's going to be fairly difficult. So we will gradually ease our way into squatting, but I think pretty early on we can build your quad strength, we can build glute and hammy strength doing some more like, I guess, open chain work where there's less compressive load. We may consider something like, and this probably depends on how long you're on blood thinners for after, but we could do something like BFR. As well, just to create a better stimulus for your quads and calves. But I think
it just heaps of peptides.
Yeah, heaps of peptides. All the steroids you can take on. We'll be probably guided very much by your symptoms, though, because as you said, you had that prior procedure that you expected to go a lot better and took a very long time to come good. And you know, I'd say having dealt with a lot of knee and hip replacements in my time, the outcomes are extremely variable. You get some people who they can really battle for the first 10 weeks and suddenly they just hit a it's like a switch gets flicked and it's way better. And then others who just make really steady linear progress, and then others who are like 2 weeks forward, 1 week back the whole way. So it's tricky to predict, but I think we'll have some processes and assessments there in place to stay on top of that.
Damn straight. Well, anything else?
No, not unless you have anything else to share.
No, I'll tell you after. Yeah. Secret stuff.
Good stuff.
I think I'll put your Instagram in the notes, and if people have any questions or if there's anyone in a similar situation, it'd be great to hear from them as well, because I think this being such a unique situation, it'd be great if there are other people looking for support or guidance or have questions or can relate.
Yeah, and we will document the journey. Kato's going to overcome her fear of
butt.
Yeah, she's going to overcome her fear of my butt in hospitals to come yeah, visit we'll me, see. Hopefully.
And I think just as a last note on that, Kate, like just to anyone else out there who I guess is suffering immensely and has been told you're too young and we need to put it off. Like I think it's worth getting a second opinion. And
yeah.
Someone who's actually going to hear you out and look objectively at what you've tried. And if you've ticked all the boxes and you're still really suffering, like there's really no reason not to consider it as an option. Like it shouldn't just be off the table. So that's probably the big take home. We don't want to be doing them willy nilly, like maybe has been done in the past, but we also don't want to take it off the table for the people that really need it.
Yeah. And as Pat said, like, you know, I asked the questions like, shouldn't I wait till I'm like 50 odd? And he's like, well, do you want to put up with this pain for another 20 odd years?
Yep.
No, it's like, well, we can get you pain free.
Well, and I mean, again, Odaline will probably kick you out well before then because of how grumpy you'll be, because of how sore you are. So
100%.
I think it's probably for the best on a number of levels.
At least now when she kicks me out, I'll be able to run.
Now you know it's about your actual personality, not your chronic pain. So when's the surgery, just quickly?
June 13th.
So we'll give another update probably in a month or so.
Yeah, I think so.
Awesome.
Keep you in the loop, fam. All right. Thank you for listening. If you've liked this episode, please like, share on whatever platform you're listening to. And yeah, you can follow Lewis on the gram at
LouSavile_physio.
And if you want to follow Kate, do you want to follow Kate?
Probably not, Kate. But it's Kate of Oz.
Is it?
C-A-I-T of A-U-S. I'm going to change that.
Yeah. And I don't know what mine is.
Coach Sean_rebuild.
There you go. Thanks for listening.